Good morning, I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, I am delighted to have as my guest our very own KMUN Coast Community Radio's beloved Joanne Rideout. Joanne has been a voice and presence on this station for over 20 years. She's worn many hats during that time. She started as a volunteer, then news director, then general manager, then news director again. And of course, her ongoing volunteer work creating and producing the Ship Report, which keeps us informed each weekday about Columbia River ship traffic. Now, Joanne is changing roles again. She has just stepped down as news director. And so we'll find out today about her history, what her plans are for the future. And we hope to honor the significant contributions she has made to KMUN Coast Community Radio for over 20 years through this program. So thank you so much for being here, Joanne.
Oh, thank you so much, Donna, for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We have much to talk about. So why don't we start, Joanne? There may be some listeners who are not familiar with you. And so I think we kind of think about it as Zen beginner's mind here. We start from the beginning. So tell us a bit about your background and history, please.
Well, I mean, originally I'm from the East Coast. I grew up in coastal Long Island in New York. And as people may have heard, if they listened to the Ship Report, that I grew up in a boating family, in a sailing family. My dad was a scientist, but in his spare time, he kind of built and repaired boats. So I grew up with my dad building a boat in our backyard. And so I grew up smelling fiberglass resin and learning how to paint things and sanding. And so I really kind of grew up in boatyards and boat hulls and sailing and really working on boats all the time. So I really embrace that wind in the willows thing, that saying, that quote that says, there's nothing more worth doing than simply messing about in boats. That was pretty much my childhood with my dad, who was a sailor.
From the time you were a little girl.
Yeah.
And were you ever afraid? I mean,
well, you know, when I was out on the boat with my dad, I was never afraid. He was really great and he taught me things. And I learned some things about how to sail, but, you know, I learned a lot more sailing here, actually. But I just always loved the water. So, you know, I learned how to swim pretty early. And sailing was just always really exhilarating. And being on boats just felt like something really fun and familiar for me to do. You know, it was kind of a family project, but there is sort of a kind of person in the world who's kind of a boat person. And I am one of those people, evidently, because I just get a lot of joy puttering around, you know, doing all those sort of choresy things that you do on boats.
So you built boats and worked on boats with your father and you sailed with him and were out in the on the East Coast in boats. And then you grew up there. And then how did you wind up on the West Coast then from the East Coast?
Oh, well, I mean, somewhere along the line in New York, I became a teacher and I went out to visit friends on spring break in the Grand Canyon, who lived in Flagstaff, Arizona. And I went hiking alone in the Grand Canyon. And that was one of those, you know, everybody has those moments in life that are kind of epiphany, turning point moments. And I just had one of those moments where I need to be here. And so I went out, I guess it was a winter break, not a spring break. And within 6 months, I'd moved out to Arizona and was teaching on the Navajo Reservation. And so that was about a 10 year or so period, maybe a dozen years where I lived in that and worked in that environment. And then, but I missed the water, you know, I always missed the water. So came out here to Oregon on a vacation. I moved to Utah in the meantime and was a freelance writer for a while, but I ended up coming out to Oregon on a vacation and with the idea of maybe moving here and just found Astoria. And it's like one of those things where people have said that they just come to Astoria and they know that it's for them. I mean, I came to Astoria in February in the middle of kind of miserable weather and just felt something special about the place. I mean, it didn't look very much, very, very good. There was no sparkling water or sunny skies, but I just found that this felt like home to me. And I know a lot of people have had that experience. So I just ended up choosing to live here and it's been a really interesting adventure. I found KMUN pretty early on and, you know, I was freelance writing and ended up being a volunteer. I came in and they needed someone to do bedtime stories. So as I say, I love to say that I had a pulse and I could read. So they needed someone, and that's how I ended up on the radio. But, you know, and it was lovely. I read things like The Velveteen Rabbit and, you know, all those lovely things, that children's stories that, and so I learned how to be on the radio through that, and things evolved. And I could just go on and on, but maybe ask me another question.
Well, I think a lot of people did come. That's how I actually started too. I read bedtime stories, and I think I met you early on. Someone said, you, when I had just moved to Estoraya, they said, you must meet Joanne Rideout. She's absolutely a marvelous person. And I think you were already news director by that time. So how did it come to be that you moved into the news director position from reading Velveteen Rabbit?
Oh, well, you know, at the time, Lisa Smith, who a lot of people know, was our manager. And she had a great background in news. And one of her her aims, her goals at the station, was to create a news department. And she had written some incredible grants that funded three positions. And one of them was a morning host, an evening host. They're two part-time jobs, and then a reporter position. And a lot of people may remember Elizabeth Wynn Johnson, who worked here for a few years. She was hired from San Francisco for that job. And I was hired, I think, for the morning or evening position as a live host for either Morning Edition or All Things Considered. And there was another guy named John Morrow who did, I think he did morning and I did All Things Considered. So I stepped into that role as an employee in like maybe 2002 or three. As things progressed, I mean, other people fell away. You know, John moved somewhere else. Elizabeth got a job somewhere else. And I ended up taking on the job of news director. And that's sort of how that came to be.
And then, what a learning curve.
Oh, it was. And it was fascinating. I mean, I learned so much here at KMUN about how to do something I'd never done before, which is what KMUN does. It teaches people how to do radio. And at some point I did some freelancing for NPR and worked with their editors. And wow, what a learning experience that was. And so much opportunity, you know. So when I think of KMUN and people maybe listening to me, that this is a wonderful place to learn and grow in that volunteer role. And so at any rate, I left the station for a few years, worked for the Coast River Business Journal, and then there was an opportunity to be the manager. And I really went into the job with the idea that I wanted to really help the station stabilize, because I knew that things were kind of difficult. And that became a whole nother adventure. I got hired, which I really had no idea when I applied that I was going to be hired. And so that was another adventure, like 7 years of helping the station grow, with a lot of help from board members and other people. So that was a whole nother role here that I assumed for about 7 years. And then I got the opportunity to go back to the news department when Graham took over as manager. And that was a wonderful thing, because I got to stay involved doing something that I love. And someone else, which was really part of the point of handing that job off to him, was to bring someone younger into that role and start that handing off of the station to the next generation, which I thought was very important. The whole time that I was in that role, I thought, we really need to plan for the next group of people who are going to keep the station going. It's an organization. It's almost, I've always saw it as that I was kind of the superintendent of a park. You know, the station belongs to the community, and it needs to be preserved. And so now that is in motion. And I feel really good about that I was sort of part of helping to hand the station off to that next generation of people who will nurture it into future years. So.
And now you have come to this, you know, this point in your life where, well, let's say that over the last couple of years, the news has been, should we say, somewhat grim. It has been challenging during the pandemic. It's been a difficult thing. And I would think that it would be a wearying job to be reporting a lot of news, which is not particularly good news.
Yes. And I think for me, after coming off of 7 years of really intense work as manager, and then going into that news role, I loved doing it. It was, when the pandemic hit, I was already feeling a little bit like I was approaching needing to do something else. And then when the pandemic hit, I thought, well, here I am in this role. It's an opportunity to serve my community in a way that I will probably never have again in my life, to be in that critical news role here. And so I just threw myself into it. Graham did an incredible job. I mean, I think that really needs to be said, of keeping the station going during this pandemic. He was the perfect person to have here. I could not have done that. And so I'm so glad that he was here to do that, because his technical knowledge, his organizational skills, his groundedness have kept the station going through the pandemic with incredible technical wizardry on his part. And I had to learn a whole nother realm of technical stuff to do my work from home in the pandemic, but it really did wear me out. I mean, so the reason why I stepped away was because I was really feeling burnout. And when you truly feel that, you have to do something about it. I feel that you really have to, for the sake of this organization, which I love, I really wanted to leave while people would still say, well, we miss her. I didn't want people to go, what is she still doing on the radio? You know, and so I feel like it was just time for me to hand this off to someone else, which is, Katie is wonderful. That's such a great choice.
And Katie Frankovich.
For me to, yes, Katie Frankowitz, and go do something else with my time. And so that after 20 years of doing that, I thought it was a good time for me to do that. And again, hand off that role to someone who is younger and someone who has that fire for it. And then I can step away and still be involved, which the Ship Report I love. And I get to devote more time to it now. And I enjoy doing it. I mean, I was always doing it after I finished everything else, because it's always been a volunteer thing for me. So I would finish all my work as an employee first, and then I would fit that in. And now I get to sort of really dabble in it more. And I'm hoping that when the pandemic eases, that I'll be able to do more live interviews and really bring that live, that community piece back into the Ship Report that was there in the beginning, when I did interview a lot of community mariners and people. So I have plans for that that are just really making me very happy to think about what I can do to make it much more local than I've been able to do in recent years. And so there's a lot of joy in that for me.
And over the years, these last 20 years, what significant changes have you seen on Columbia River ship traffic? I mean, I think people look to you as the voice of Columbia River ship traffic, really, with the Ship Report. And now we know about your love of boats and how you've had many adventures, even on some of these big cargo ships. And you've really helped us understand what happens there on the river right in front of downtown Astoria. So what changes have you noticed over these 20 years you've been working on that?
Well, I mean, before I say that, I just want to say thank you to all the people who have helped me learn and invited me into their lives to get me on those ships and get me talking to those people, and people who have shared their love of maritime things with me, because I wouldn't be able to do this without that. So I so appreciate that. But changes, well, you know, ship traffic's pretty stable here. We are still the same kind of port area region that we were when I first started doing this. We are primarily an export region for grain and raw materials and ores. And we have some, I would say during the pandemic, we have some more container ships coming in here, but we are a big export region for wheat, and that is still happening. So I've had a lot of questions over the past couple of years from people who think that when there are ships in the anchorage, or they see ships, if they look at marinetraffic.com, sometimes ships are waiting out in the ocean, taxiing around, waiting to come in, motoring around, that there's a big backup of ships here. And it really isn't like LA or San Francisco or even Seattle. We have ships coming in here waiting to load wheat, and we have some container ships coming in, but ship traffic is moving well, and we're not straining to handle the ships that are coming in here. So I've always been amazed when the 2008 recession hit. We did have a big slowdown in ship traffic for a few years, where there would be days where there were few or no ships. But, you know, there's at least a dozen ships going by every day that I see, anecdotally going by here in my sort of, my casual look at the ship traffic. But the Portland Merchants Exchange, which monitors ship traffic, I mean, there are lots of ships. They monitor all the ship traffic on the river. There are tugboats up in Lewiston, Idaho. There are ships at various berths around in the Portland, Vancouver area and down to Longview and Kalama. And so there are always a lot of ships on the river, and there always have been, and there are, so things are good. I guess from our perspective, we are not jammed up. We have a lot of commerce happening here, so.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. And today my guest is KMUN Coast Community Radio's own beloved Joanne Rideout. Joanne has been a voice and presence on the station for over 20 years. She's been the news director, the general manager, news director again, and she has just now stepped down from her role as news director. However, the Ship Report, which was her original idea many years ago, which she creates and produces, will continue every weekday to give us updates on Columbia River ship traffic. And Joanne, I just want to say again how grateful I am for you helping us in Astoria understand the sense of place which exists there because of the Columbia River and the ship traffic. I mean, it is just a unique place in the world. It's singular. And the geographic location, what happens, people have sometimes said they think Astoria is at the edge of the world, but the world comes to Astoria every day. It's passing in front of our eyes.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I really noticed the ships on that first day that I came into town and stopped at so maybe that was a defining moment for me, stopped at the Chamber of Commerce. And there was a young man out there kind of cleaning up the parking lot, kind of a maintenance guy. And we just sort of got talking about Astoria. And he said, I'm here for the ships. I looked around and there were no ships going by at that moment. And I said, huh, what? And he said, well, the ships go by every day. You should watch for them because they're really cool. And that's why I'm here. And I thought, okay, I didn't see any ships. And then when I finally moved here and started to volunteer at KMUN and work here, and I looked out the window and I saw the ships going by, and I understood what he meant, because the ships go by and they're huge. When you're at the top of a street here and you look down at the waterfront, the ships block out Washington as they go by. They block out the space between the buildings, and you just see those ships going by so close to the Oregon side of the river that it feels like you could reach out and touch them. So they are so immediate here that they are on everybody's personal radar. And I think that is the reason why a show like The Ship Report touches everyone, because we've all had that feeling of mystery, at least if you're a person who likes that sort of thing, of just seeing this giant thing going by silently, can't see any people on it. Like, what is that? Is it a giant sea monster? No, it's a ship. And what is it doing here? And so the questions in my mind were just immediate and ongoing and remain. And 20 years later, there's always so much more, because it is such a huge subject and such a huge and wonderful subject for people who are interested in it, and which seems to have people here who are, which I'm grateful for.
Yes, I would sometimes liken it to a Monty Python sketch. It's like, wait, here's this darling historic downtown, and wait, there's this giant object moving behind the buildings. So yes, a source of wonder and inspiration, actually, and at night, all of that. Well, so Joanne, what are you going to be doing with your time now? So we're not losing you. We're going to keep you as the voice of the Ship Report each weekday morning. But what are you going to be doing with your time now that you have stepped away from 20 years in positions at KMUN Coast Community Radio?
Well, I'm really grateful to be able to step away, first of all, because I know that we're all still under a lot of pandemic stress, and I know not everyone can do what I have been able to do. I'm at the age to do it, and I've been able to, and I'm grateful for that. But, getting enough sleep has been a big priority, and I'm working on that, and that's great. I have a couple of projects that are working in the works right now. I'm getting my dad's house ready to sell. And I'm also working on a boat project, which is quite dear to my heart. My dad and I worked on a boat project for about 10 years before he died. And it's restoring a sailboat that we bought together that was in terrible shape. It's a beautiful boat. It used to belong to Dan Ide, who would do accounting for the station, bookkeeping for the station. And 22-foot sailboat, deep keel. It has a wood stove in it. It's a double ender. It has oar locks. It's just, and I used to admire this boat from afar for years in the Warrenton Marina. I would just stop and look at it and kind of dream. And one day I ran into him on the Riverwalk and he said, "Do you want that boat?" We would chat about it. And I said, "What?" He said, you can have that boat." And he named a very low price. And so I took Dad down to the boat and I said, "What do you think? Can we fix this boat?" And he walked around on it and said, "Yeah, we can." And so on that basis, started this odyssey of fixing up this 22-foot sailboat with a cabin. And it's just a beautiful thing. So at any rate, flash forward years, 10 years, Dad's 98 years old. And one of the last things he said to me before he died was, "I'm really sorry that I couldn't finish this boat for you." And so he passed away not too long before the pandemic started. And the boat just sat there in the barn. I was too grief-stricken to deal with it. And finally, a few weeks ago, I went down to the boat, looked at it in the barn, and thought, should I sell it? What the heck should I do with it? And I just had this sense of incredible regret at the thought of losing this boat. And I started looking at it and realizing how much he had done to get this boat ready for me and that there wasn't that much left. And I thought, well, maybe I can do this. Maybe I really can finish this project that meant so much to both of us. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I've learned a lot from him. With help from some people that I know, I think I'm going to be able to pull this off and maybe put this boat in the water and honor the great gift that he gave to me. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And so I go down and work on my boat in the barn, and I've taken a lot of mouse poop out of that boat. I'll just leave it at that. It's been sitting there for 10 years.
Okay.
Just leave that where it is. But so that's kind of what I'm on right now. And so I spend a lot of time in the barn, which I love, working on the boat. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now, just trying to finish that project and maybe sail it on the river this summer. And we'll just see how it goes, one step at a time.
Well, you're doing this as a way to honor your father and that relationship, your love of boats. And so that's very hopeful if you're saying maybe this summer.
I hope so. I mean, I'm learning a lot, and it's just part of a kind of a journey in my life that I want to try to complete. And she's a lovely boat, still is, and I love her. So we'll see where that
does she have. What's her name? What's the name, of the boat?
Passage. Isn't that a wonderful name? That was her name when I got her, and that will be her name. So I've always loved.
Well, you're in a new passage of your life, and so you also said you maybe will be doing some writing.
Oh, I hope so. You know, when things calm down a little bit, I just have at least one book in me, I think, and want to do some writing and expand the ship report. You know, I feel like I'm just like a kid in the candy store now with the ship report, because I have so much more time to think about what I want to do with it. So I'm just so glad people want to listen to it, because it is a love for me. And I'm so grateful to have an audience of people who want that, because there's a lot to tell. There's still a lot to tell.
How are you feeling now about Astoria and all the changes which have happened, even really, I think mostly in the last 10 years, there's been just a lot of change.
Well, I mean, I think things are evolving, and that's what they need to do, you know, and one of the wonderful things about this community is that people want to be involved. That's a great thing. And I think, you know, there's growing pains and there's discussion, and all those things are really what the whole world is going through right now. I mean, the world is evolving right now. A lot of things are happening. We don't really know where they're going to go on the world stage, on the local stage. I think it's just, you know, things are changing, and I don't know.
What are you hopeful about, and what are you concerned about?
Well, I would hope that people can remain civil to one another. And because I see a lot of us are, people are really stressed and people are really easily triggered. We all are. And so I would just hope for people to take a deep breath, maybe more, and think before they speak, and just try to remember that we're all in this together, you know. And I know it's hard to do, and I don't always do it either, but I think it's just an important sort of a North Star, if you will, in a nautical terms, to keep in mind that we're not enemies. We're all kind of on the same side. I mean, in most cases, certainly in a community like ours, we don't have to be enemies, and that's important. So,
and so then you would have a concern about the stress leading to, unfortunately, people being uncivil to one another, and the hopeful things that you are seeing.
Well, you know, I have a lot of hope for young people. I think the next generation is a pretty concerned bunch of people, but what I see around me at KMUN is wonderful. the younger people who have come into this organization who are helping it blossom in different ways are just wonderful people. And I think that that's fabulous. And I can't help but think that they are in some way a reflection of the larger community of younger people who are really going to be taking over this world from us. And that I'm hopeful about that.
We only have just a few moments left. So any other thoughts that you'd like to share with the listeners about, obviously, the you know, I think more than ever, KMUN Coast Community Radio has a vital role to play in our world. And any thoughts about that you'd like to share as we kind of come to the end of this program?
Well, I would just say that in your community, wherever you are, support your community radio station. It's been a big part of my life, and it's a vital thing. It's neighbors talking to neighbors on the radio. And that's a really vital thing in this increasingly disconnected world where things are so global and we're on computers talking to one another. Community radio is neighbors talking to neighbors. I mean, that's a beautiful thing and a thing that needs to be nurtured and protected. So I would say that's quite important in my mind, you know, and I would always support KMUN as long as I have breath in me, as they say. So,
yes. And because it does reflect and can actually also help shape perhaps a kinder, more informed, more connected community. And I think we do have to look first, right, to our own communities, as you've said.
Yeah. And I think we have a great community here of people who are very involved, who have kept this station going for what, 38, 39 years now. I mean, that's an incredible feat to have kept this station going. And, you know, there's that sort of joke that I heard when I first moved here, that if you take any 20 people in Astoria, 10 of them, and put them in a room, 10 of them will have volunteered at KMUN at some point. And I think that's true. It's kind of a bonding thing. It's a connecting thing. That people, because this is a community station that relies on its community to stay for its programmers and for its financing and for its connection to the community. It's very community powered.
Well, I just want to say I'm personally so grateful to know you, to be a friend, and to for all that you've done for all of us throughout all the years. And we're excited to see the passage in the water.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, and if you see me in the co-op in really ratty clothes, it's my boat clothes.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay. Thank you so much, Joanne Rideout. Thank you a million.
Thank you, Donna. And, thanks so much.
Thank you, Emma, for your technological expertise today in making this happen. And my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Brunn for his original theme music for this program, Talk of Our Towns, which airs the first Thursday of each month at 9 a.m. Thanks to all of you. And as Joanne said, it is important to just stop and take a deep breath. So why don't we just take a moment right now and all of us just take a very deep healing breath. It is so good for body, mind, and spirit. And then with gratitude, focus on the things that are going well in your life. There will always be things that aren't, but focus on those things that are. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, the only one. For doing the best you can, everyone is, until we know better, we do what we think is best. And for being here now, in the only moment that exists, the now moment, on the amazing planet we call Earth.